WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We are back, second week in a row, getting into the swing of things. Football season is almost here. Just a week, less than a week, until Syracuse football hits the Dome turf in its opener against New Hampshire. Griff Bloomstein, Josh Rother back with you. Another episode. We got a big one today. We're breaking down Syracuse football schedule. We did a full roster discussion last week. We have our biggest guest of the year, Brent Dax, who's been on the podcast 9 times before today. Today marked his 10th appearance on the podcast. We'll talk to Brent in a little bit about the roster, touch on the new coaches, and a whole lot more. But Josh, as always, first week under the belt back in Syracuse. How has it been? Syracuse weather hasn't really, I guess, shifted quite too much yet, but how's it been for you so far?
Yeah, it's been good. Did a little bit of, you know, outdoor construction work the last couple of days. I was outside. It's a tame, you know, 70 degrees during the day, 60 degrees at night. No complaints yet. Not a lot of rain. Definitely no snow yet. So I think it's a pretty good, you know, it does get a little cool at night. It does make you feel like it's fall again and football season is back. And Griffin, I'm pretty excited. I think a lot of people that had frustrations last year about the way the season ended are going to be a little bit more upbeat when they hear some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about here today.
That is true. And you mentioned college football season being back. We've already seen 3 of Syracuse's opponents play in week 0. That is Virginia, NC State, and New Hampshire, the opener. So
we and got, North Carolina
played. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Which a big win for Bill Belichick out in Ireland. I did not have that coming, but I should have realized if Bill's coaching a game and it's in another continent, that Bill is probably gonna have his team better prepared than the opposing coach. Yeah. And former Syracuse linebacker Derek McDonald led the way with 11 tackles for the Tar Heels. A little, good for him. Someone that, you know, maybe Syracuse's defense could use. We also had some big news today. We're recording this Sunday. We'll get this up on Monday. It was NFL roster cuts day. Syracuse football had a decent amount of players make the cut this year. And a couple highlights. Kyle McCord traded from the Packers, where he had 4 passing touchdowns, and it was all over social media a couple days ago, to the Dolphins. That means he's making the Dolphins roster back up to Malik Willis. So maybe we'll get some Kyle McCord in South Beach action. LaQuint Allen still making the team with the Jaguars. We got Rondae Gadsden, Elijah Clark, some other rare names that we haven't heard in a while. Kevin Jobity Jr. making an NFL roster. Good for him. Jackson Meeks as well. And then Sean Tucker signed a big 1 year, $3 million extension, getting paid. Hashtag pleased for that.
Yes, sir. Absolutely pleased with that. I'm pleased with the McCord trade too. I think it's an interesting spot. I think you look at the overhaul that Miami's doing to their roster, and just they're gonna be in a tough spot with Malik Willis as a starting quarterback. I think you see McCord get a few chances. If Willis starts to slip, I think there's a reason that, obviously Green Bay had a tough decision to make with McCord on if they keep a third QB on the roster or not, and they ship him off to Miami for a sixth round pick where he becomes the team's number two quarterback. How many quarterbacks go down throughout the course of the season? How many quarterbacks get benched for poor play and they make a quarterback switch? I think there's a very good chance we see some Kyle McCord action. Maybe he even starts later on in the season if the Malik Willis experiment doesn't exactly pan out. And this is going to be a team that's probably picking at the start of next year's draft that's looking at their next franchise quarterback. But it's a great chance for McCord to prove himself that could give himself a chance to be in the QB conversation this year and next year in Miami. And we all know what he's capable of doing. It's just, will he get the chance to do it?
Yeah, and after last year, I think it was a little bumpy for him adjusting to the NFL. It's good to see him have a really, really good preseason and for a team to go out and get him, because that's essentially what the Dolphins did. They were like, all right, we want this guy to be our backup quarterback. And who knows? As you mentioned, a lot of quarterbacks go down, a lot of quarterbacks don't play well. Kyle McCord could get that opportunity, maybe week one, maybe week
All he
two.
had to
Who
do,
knows?
was have a foot in the door. And once he's got, a chance, he's no longer a third string guy. He's the second guy. So immediately he's next man up. He's not possibly not dressing for some of these games. He's going to be in the mix every day.
That is true. And it'll be fun to watch. I guess I'll get to see the Dolphins at least twice this year, as a Patriots fan, I would say. So interesting. Hopefully we get some Kyle McCord action. Hopefully Syracuse guys continue to excel. We saw Matthew Bergeron, former Syracuse offensive lineman, get paid this offseason, $100 million contract by the Falcons. So good stuff there. Let's shift back to college football in Syracuse, who we recorded this, recorded last week's episode, and then the next day, Justice Ross Simmons went from going to be eligible to ineligible the day after we recorded. We are recording now Sunday, and as of Sunday night, he is back eligible to be playing college football, practicing with the team, which just tells you that anything can happen. We could wake up Saturday morning, September 5th, and he could be eligible, but by the time 11:30 a.m. strikes and Syracuse is on the field, Justice Ross Simmons could be ineligible to play. We have absolutely zero idea what is going on with one judge or the other judge, with whose judge or commissioner, blah 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 blah. Justice Ross Simmons could be playing or not, and we won't know until 12 o'clock hits and the ball goes up in the air.
I mean, dare I say there could be like a switch in the middle of a game. Like, could he like get a
It might be.
call in the middle of the second quarter? There's 7:43 to play in the second quarter, and all of a sudden Justice Ross Simmons puts his pads on, puts his helmet on, and runs on the field. Now, this is madness. And honestly, you gotta not feel for Steve, but it's gotta be tough for him too. He's going, because not only is he ineligible to play when he's ineligible, he can't practice. So he can't practice with the team. So Steve is all of a sudden getting to the field one day and he can throw to JRS. And then the next day, it's like, yeah, he's not coming today. He's ineligible right now. So it really kind of messes with your head a little bit because he's expected to be the number one receiver because he is the one of the six guys. He's the only of the top six receivers from last season that's returning to this team. And you would expect him to, as he knows the offense, he has that connection with Steve that we saw in the first couple weeks of the season last year. Would expect it to be the guy, but when you're in and out of practice like that, I mean, that really does more harm than good.
Yeah, and we do know that he can be around team activities, which is good because every year, it seems like we get this viral Syracuse clip on social media from like the locker room or from practice.
A friend pool party one.
And this clip went viral and got posted over like ESPN and Bleacher Report of Coach Fran announcing that the team is taking a day off practices and going to a pool party at Coach Fran's house. And luckily, I saw Justice Ross Simmons was allowed to go because he can participate now
Yay.
fully. but also with team activities. So I was a little worried that JRS couldn't go to the pool party, and then I was reassured, okay, he can go to the pool party. It was so cool to see. They posted some photos on social media of the guys clearly having a great time. The last one, it looked like they were throwing Fran in the pool, which, if you're fighting for minutes, I'm not sure if you should be throwing Fran into the pool. I'm not sure if he'd like that or not. But hey, if you're a starter, I think Steve, can go pick him up, or Byron Washington could probably do it solo and just
I'm
pick
sure.
up Fran and toss him into the pool. Let's get back to the schedule. Syracuse opens against New Hampshire at noon, September 5th. WAER will have coverage at 11 a.m. McClure Remodeling countdown to kickoff, an hour long special edition, hour long McClure for the season opener. And New Hampshire started off its season. Now let me put it this way: they played
Doom.
UAlbany.
The doom.
It was a bit of a doom game.
Yes.
28-14, a loss to University of Albany. Now, what does that mean? Syracuse should probably win this game by 40 to 50 points.
Yes. I would agree. I think you have a team that hasn't played the full version of itself since the Clemson game last year, the Colgate game last year before the injury. That's a team that's not 8 months removed from playing its team football. It's almost a full year. I mean, essentially, the middle of September is when the season ended for Syracuse last year. So they've gone almost a full year without playing this sport. I would expect them to run the score up. I would expect you to see Jeff Nixon really empty the board. Not give away every play, but just empty the board and just see what he has. And I think you're going to see a lot of guys get playing time, and you're going to see the playmakers from this team very quickly stand out. I think you're going to get a better idea of the running back room, which I think is an important thing. Is it going to be a committee? You would hope in week one it's still a committee. You don't want, or maybe you do want the hot hand, but I would like to see 10 plus carries for, if not Juwan Johnson and Ahmad Miller, all three. I would want Tylee Kill to get some carries down the stretch too. I want to see what this team can do. And I think this is a, like we said, a perfect tune-up. This is an FCS opponent that's coming to your place. This is not going down to Georgia and getting thrown to the fire right away. This is a true chance to start your season and create what you want this season to look like.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. A couple things to note from that UAlbany game is the Great Danes rushed for nearly 400 yards. So, any indication,
There
Syracuse
might be a
running
couple
game?
holes. Might be a couple holes.
Yeah. And we'll get a good glimpse of the O-line. We'll get a good glimpse of the running back room. The other part is it might be a little more difficult to say who's kind of given got the edge in that running back conversation if they all rush for 100 yards, because that's just how bad the Wildcats defense is. Another thing to mention is that Brooks Bentley, UNH's starting quarterback, threw for 230 yards, was kind of efficient, threw for two touchdowns. So Syracuse, they have a decent quarterback in New Hampshire. Syracuse's defense probably not going to be tested, but we'll get a good glimpse of a QB who can, I guess, throw the ball against an FCS team. Can do that against Chris Peel and Demetrius Samuel? My guess is no. So after that, Syracuse plays Cal, Pitt, UConn. I think those three games are going to be similar caliber tiers. I think what sets Cal apart is, of course, their quarterback and having a top, I would say, confident 10 quarterback in the country in JRS. Their JRS.
A different J. JKS.
JRK, JKS. Yeah.
JKS.
There's all these
From
names and
Hawaii.
such from Hawaii.
Yes.
Syracuse doesn't have a quarterback from Hawaii, I can tell you
No.
that.
No.
And that's what sets Cal apart. And he can throw the ball. And that's what I can say confidently. And then Pitt's a team that Syracuse has struggled to beat,
Yeah.
just historically. And so if Syracuse is going to have a good season, they need to win that Pitt matchup. And that's something we say every season, and then they usually lose. So I think that'll be a big game. UConn's UConn. But from those three games, do you have any big takeaways from what Syracuse can
Yeah.
do?
I mean, yeah, like obviously the Pitt game, I think I'm circling. Just it feels awfully similar, not in terms of when this game is being played. Well, kind of, because it's a Thursday night game. Because the last time they went to Pitt, on Thursday night. We all remember McCord with the five interceptions, the three pick sixes. It just kind of was another game you look back on at the end of that year, like, wow, if only this didn't happen. And the Pitt game was obviously the furthest game from, you look at the Stanford loss with the 4th and 13 conversion, you look at the BC loss where they just couldn't stop anything on the ground. That game was kind of like, okay, you can lose that one and still be okay if you win the other two. You could have been looking at obviously the ACC championship, but potentially a college football berth in his first year. Now, this year, I think it's going to be nearly impossible to get to the college football playoff. They're going to need to win probably 10 or 11 regular season games to give themselves a chance to do that. But I don't see a reason why they can't be 4-0 at the end of this stretch. And I don't think they should be thinking that they're going to be 4-0 at the end of this. And I certainly wouldn't be thinking they're going to be 4-0 at the end of this because they do have, like Brent said later on, when we talk to Brent, you'll hear. I mean, they have three games in essentially 12 days. Like that's mentally taxing for a team, especially with that third game being a road game against a team that you have historically not been great against, especially under Fran Brown. 0-2 against Pittsburgh under Fran Brown. So that's already not really adding up to be, a strong season. So maybe you get the bye week, you get extra time to prepare. Then you got a good old Toledo clash. Vince Karras goes up against his former head coach at Toledo, Jason Candle, who's now the UConn coach. So maybe Vince Karras has a couple tricks up his sleeve. He knows the kind of system that Candle likes to run, but that's not going to be a tough game to win. And that's not going to be a tough game to win because, I mean, that is going to be a tough game to win. Excuse me. That's going to be a tough game to win because, I mean, UConn last year, that was a tough game. And they, of course, Jim Mora last year, but you're looking at two road games that are certainly going to be tests early on in the season. Now, I would say if you get Cal out of the way, you tame JKS in the early going. I don't see a reason why they can't split between Pittsburgh and UConn and be 3-1. And I think that should be a realistic expectation if this team stays healthy, as they should win three of the first four games.
Yeah, I agree. And that's going to be huge for them because then they have to go down to Charlottesville, who just beat the brakes off of NC State.
They look good.
And Virginia looks like, which I guess a little shocking, even after what they did last season and going to that ACC championship game, is that Virginia is going to be a very, very good team. Like, they're going to be someone that you do not really want to see on your schedule because I think with this team, beat anybody. They have a great atmosphere down in Charlottesville where they're going to, as someone who was there last year, not for a football game, but still, their campus is awesome. Their fans show up. And if they get a good team around them and now they have a good quarterback slinging the ball, they can go out and beat most teams, especially in the ACC this year where there's going to be a couple top dogs, but I think even those top teams are going to be beatable. And that's what's going to be interesting about this conference specifically, is that we've seen it before. Like, we've seen a Florida State team be ranked in the top five and not win games. Plural, actually, not win more than one game. And so
Wilson
that is
Southern or
what's
Florida Southern or
interesting.
whatever it was. It was, and it was by like 2 points. It was a bad team. It was a bad team.
That was a bad team. But anyway, like, that's going to be a team that you're going to look out for and be like, okay, that's probably a loss when people were hoping, all right, maybe you can steal one down in Charlottesville.
By the way,
Now,
Florida State. I don't think we've played Florida State since I got on campus. That's so
they
weird.
lost to Florida State. They got the brakes beaten off of Florida
And
State.
that was the year that they started really hot in 2023. Yeah, that was the last time they played them. They haven't played them in any. Yeah, they haven't played them in now any of the 3 years I've been here. Wow, that's really weird. I know they switched the scheduling up a couple years ago, but to not see an opponent for 3 straight years kind of seems interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they played North Carolina almost every year. That's when Drake May tore them to bits. They almost got 70 piece in that game. So, who's also next? You got Louisville, SMU, sandwiched by North Carolina, who's the team that we just saw beat TCU, who was favored by over a touchdown. So you never know what you're going to get with the Bill Belichick coach squad. Get him, adjusted to college football. And then you also have Clemson, SMU, Louisville, who probably could all three be ranked teams going into that matchup, if you never know how they play. So like the schedule's not as easy as you kind of think. You have to, that's why That's why I think both of our themes is you have to take care of business in those first four games while winning three. I think you gotta win three of the first four games if you want to make a bowl game.
I think it would be a disservice to Fran Brown's job as a coach, even if you look at just the small sample size of games where he had a starting quarterback last year. Even if Clemson wasn't good, I mean, they were a preseason top two team in the country. So whatever you want to say, there was so much talent on that team. And yeah,
So much talent.
they didn't really have a great season, and maybe it was too much individual play and they weren't really grouped together well. But I mean, you look at his first year, the vintage win against Miami. He gets a vintage win on the road at Clemson, albeit that Clemson team, like we said, was not what they were chalked up to be at the start of the year. I have a hard time seeing that they have three preseason AP top 25 teams on the schedule in Louisville, SMU, and Notre Dame, and think that he doesn't win at least one of those games. Now, also with the sample size, you have to go back to 2024 when they did lose games that you would not expect them to lose. The Stanford loss felt unexpected. The Pittsburgh loss, yeah, sure. The BC loss, I mean, they really lost at BC. Like, that wasn't a very good loss. So I think there's going to be a game in here. You look at either Pittsburgh or NC State isn't great. Boston College again, possibly. I think you're going to trade one good win for one bad loss. And I think this team ends either 6-6 or 7-5.
Yeah, I don't have them in a much different place. I think it's gonna be 6-6 or 5-7 most likely. I wouldn't be surprised if this team wins seven games, but I think that bad loss could be the reason why Syracuse doesn't make a bowl game instead of, just going 6-6. The game against NC State, that's gonna be the game. Okay, can you beat that? Can you beat BC on the road? Can you beat Pitt on the road? Those have been the games that historically Syracuse has lost and been the reason why expectations, I guess, if you can say expectations with Syracuse football, but why fans have felt dissatisfied with this team in recent
And
years.
you make a good point with the bad losses because you ask a fan the 2024 season, the 10-3 record, and they would say they underperformed, and they did because they had two bad losses that were controllable at the end of the games, and they had one great win over Miami. They were a couple plays away. They were a 4th-and-13 stop, and having any player on the field that could tackle Kayvon Robichaud away from beating Boston College and going 12-1 that season, or maybe even playing a 14th or a 15th game.
When you think about the amount of talent that's in the NFL from that team, Rondae Gadsden, Jaxson Meeks, Elijah Clark, Kevin Jobity Jr., Marlon Wax, Fadil Diggs.
Thanks, yeah.
There's so much talent on that team that you can look at Trevor Peña, who had a really good preseason and was like talked about, okay, is this guy gonna make an NFL roster after going undrafted? Like, these are guys that could play, and I don't want to dwell too much on what ifs, but that could have been a college football playoff team. And I think that's what is interesting when you look at this season, where you don't really know what you have. You have a schedule of games you can win. You have a schedule of, all right, you play good teams, you play them in the dome. It's going to
Yes,
be
you do
hard for
get the
these
guys at
teams.
home this year instead of having to travel every which way last year. I mean, do you know how big it would be if Fran got 70 pieced at Notre Dame last year and came back and beat them to like knock them out of the college football playoff, deja vu 2 years ago to Miami.
That would be another tone-setting win. Could be the reason why Calvin Russell doesn't leave in the portal. Could be
Yeah.
the reason you pick up another five-star.
You're looking at
Like
dominoes
these.
here. He's building something.
And maybe it all stems from this pool party that happened today or yesterday.
That's what it all goes back to, is this pool.
And that's maybe the reason. We have plenty more to discuss Syracuse football-wise with Syracuse.com's Brent Axe. It was an amazing interview. Highly suggest you continue listening. We'll now toss that over to our interview with Brent Tax. We now have the pleasure of being joined by Brent Tax of Syracuse.com, frequent guest of the Ostrom Avenue podcast, and the first guest of football season 2026. Brent, how is everything going today?
Well, if we're talking and we're talking about football, that means summer's over. So always a sad thing that the state fair has started, and I've been at football practice for the past few weeks. So summer's over, but that means football's here, which is a good thing. And by the way, I still have the belt, right? I think I still have the title belt for most appearances on the show. So what I want you guys to do is, if anybody it just comes close to that, just have me on. So I'm always at least one appearance ahead of whoever is number two.
You have now been the first person to the double-digit club, 10th appearance
Let's go.
congratulations on
That's
the
a good.
Ostrom
Thank
Avenue
you, Josh. Thank you. Can I
podcast.
get something to put on my shelf up here?
We'll send in the mail.
That'd be
We'll get
great.
it
That'd be
rolling
great.
soon.
Little plaque or something.
Yes. So let's start off with football. Obviously, you've spent some time at camp. I just want to see how, I guess, the vibes are at camp, and I know it's been a, I guess, off-season number two, three, if you count the first year under Fran Brown, and how that has gone, and what, I guess, the energy is like at camp.
The energy is always up at camp. Fran always keeps it going. Fran's kind of the voice of God at camp because he wears a wireless microphone, so you hear him everywhere, and he still is very active coaching the defensive backs, which is always fun to see Fran get in there. The biggest vibe change that I have noticed is the experience that surrounds Fran Brown. We talked to Juan Castillo, the new offensive line coach, just this week. He got very emotional in discussing the chance that Fran has given him. There were reports in the offseason that John Harbaugh wanted to bring him to the New York Giants, but Juan stuck it out here. The guy's coached in the National Football League for almost 30 years, and he got really emotional with the opportunity to come to Syracuse and coach with Fran Brown. And that offensive line needs an upgrade. Vince Karras brings a presence to that defensive room that Elijah Robinson just didn't. He's had top 10 defenses at Toledo the past few years. Sean Ryan's won two Super Bowls. And when you got Tom Coughlin standing around a camp who coached Sean Ryan and they worked together, and you can say that Tom Coughlin is your mentor, but he brings that weight and that experience to the room. That's a big thing that has stood out to me. And look, Syracuse made an investment in the transfer portal in players. You have to. That's the name of the game these days. And they're counting on a couple of them to really step in and contribute right away. But the biggest investment they made was in that coaching staff. I left out a few guys, but those three stand out just because they have so much experience.
Juan really impressed me from, the sound he gave yesterday after practice, and just you could tell he was a guy who had experience, like you mentioned, the 3 decades in the NFL. With a healthy QB1, we don't normally like to talk at wins as a QB stat, but when Fran Brown has his QB1 healthy, Syracuse is 13-4. So it's kind of interesting because you look at last season and kind of the end of the year. And you really felt unsatisfied. You didn't get to see Steve Angeli finish the season. So I guess, kind of looking at what you've seen at camp, does this year's team mirror year one or year two more in terms of kind of the hype and the buzz around this team? Because year one, there was a lot of buzz around McCord. Year two, it kind of withered away when Angeli went down. Is this a team that Syracuse should be confident in to make, a bowl game, win 6 games?
I feel like this is a six-win team. I don't want to make a record prediction because that just annoys the hell out of me that someone's going to come to me in a few months if I'm wrong. Well, you said they'd go 7-5. It's like, yes, my inability to see the future remains undefeated. I can't see the future. I'm sorry, guys. But I do feel like this is a six-win team, bare minimum. I feel like this is a bowl team. They've upgraded the quarterback room, which we've got to talk about here, and it's a great point, Josh. But you look all around. I'm wondering about the trenches like anybody is. Castillo was the big investment in the offensive line. They only brought in two offensive linemen from the portal, which surprised a lot of people. I like the defensive linemen that they brought in from the portal, and particularly the pass rush that they brought in with Keyshawn Johnson, who was, an FCS All-American and had 13 and a half sacks last year. But a lot of these guys have to make an upgrade, right? And we can go through other positions at linebacker and receiver that have to make the upgrade. But Josh, you made the best point of all here. Only two quarterbacks since 2012 have gone the distance for Syracuse, having not been replaced by either injury or performance. Ryan Nassib in 2012, and the other one was Kyle McCord in 2024. Steve Angeli was just starting to hit his stride, leading the nation in passing when he went down against Clemson last year. And we saw what was just the ultimate example of what can go wrong when you do not have a backup quarterback. So Syracuse invested significantly in the backup quarterback position. Should Angeli go down again, and the record shows that I hope he doesn't, I hope he plays 12 games and all is well, but the record shows that the backup quarterback's going to play at Syracuse. And Malachi Nelson, who I think is going to be the number two, that could change, but I think he's got the inside track on that. But if you have to go to Amari Odom, both of these guys have significant experience on the field. Even Danny Lauter, who they brought in from Georgetown, has played in 13 college games, right? So, man, if you can't get what you need from the backup with that much experience on the field, I don't know what to tell you, because Fran Brown did everything he had to make that room better than it was last year.
You mentioned Steve Angeli starting to hit his stride. It really seemed like he was a different quarterback against Colgate and against Clemson than he was in the first two games of that season. What should fans expect from Steve Angeli coming off the injury, but also knowing that it took him a little bit to kind of get acclimated to Syracuse's offense?
Griffin, it's a great point because that wide receiver room is completely different than it was last year. That's why we wanted, or pardon me, Steve wanted to bring in Justice Ross Simmons, who, as we speak, that is a little up in the air. Like, I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast, but right now, Justice Ross Simmons has to get cleared by a court of law to get on the football field. Right now, there's a stay from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals that Justice Ross Simmons and incoming Syracuse basketball transfer Amari Monroe cannot practice. They can participate in team activities, but they can't play right now. But that is going to be appealed, and we'll see if that comes through. That's significant to me that Steve, and however the process went down, called Justice Ross Simmons at the request of Fran Brown or not. I'm not sure exactly the timeline of matters, but he wanted some familiarity in that room. They had a connection. He had five touchdowns last season, also battled some injuries as well. He missed four games and then he was ineffective in four other games. And let's face it, when the quarterback situation turned into what it is, every receiver on that team was ineffective. That's a whole new room of receivers. And remember, Steve was recovering in spring. He was not an active participant in spring. And they had the summer sessions and they had training camp. Did he find a connection? Did he find kind of the how can I put this? What's the pecking order in the receiver room? Steve was talking about it yesterday that he really appreciates the versatility in the receiver room. So I think the advantage there, Griffin, is your first game is New Hampshire. It is not Tennessee as it was last year. So Syracuse essentially gets the preseason game that you don't get in college football. No offense to our friends in New Hampshire, but he gets that game to figure that out before things ramp up. You got Cal and Pitt to follow. That's three games, and somebody do the math on that. Three games in what, 12 days that they're playing? September 5th, September 12th. It's my birthday, by the way. Take note of that. And September
Happy birthday.
17th, which is a Thursday night game against Pitt, and Pitt
We all know
owns.
how that went last time,
And
too.
we all, not only last year, but Pitt owns this team over the last 20 years. So that New Hampshire game will give them the breath they need to figure things out, guys. But after that, you better be ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, you make a good point with kind of having a tune-up game. Something we saw last year was Yasin Willis getting some good volume in the Tennessee game where Fran was, singing his praises after the game about how he was the best player on the team. He never saw that volume again, never got 20 or more carries in a game. And, part of it is Angeli going down. But you look at this year where you have a chance to kind of get your run game more established in a preseason type game against New Hampshire. Who are you looking for in the running back room to kind of stand out here as we get closer to the season and maybe have the upper hand as we start the year?
Yeah, nobody was a bigger fan of Willis than I was. I loved him as a player, and we kind of made a connection. And his dad l listens to my podcast, and I was a big fan of him. But it just didn't work out. He's at Kansas now, and we wish him the best. So that is a room that is going to be very dependent on transfers. It's probably, you can make the case, the room that needs the most immediate impact from a transfer on the entire team. Because you got Amon Miller, who you brought in, and Juwan Johnson, who you brought in. I wouldn't leave Tylee Kill out of that conversation. He has earned an orange jersey at camp as we saw the rewarding of the orange jerseys on offense and the black jerseys on defense was kind of a way to show that certain players were standing out. Miller and Johnson are two different running backs. Johnson's more of a shifty back. Miller's more of a third down kind of power back, which is good. You want that versatility in that room, and Tyreek Hill brings a little bit of everything. I wouldn't leave Kerr out of that discussion as well. Always a very confusing thing, by the way, when you have two players with the same name, with the same number, and the spelling of their name is off by like one letter. So, we'll just say Kerr, the running back in this case, who they moved to running back in kind of the transition from spring to fall camp, and people really like what they see out of him. So I'm as curious as anybody. I think we had more of an idea of what that running back room was last year, Josh. But then when, the passing game went off, everybody knew Syracuse was trying to run the ball. So at least you get a little bit of that balance this year.
I want to talk some wide receivers right now, and Fran was really singing the praises of Umari Hatcher in media ops a couple of days ago, and he's a guy that has been injury riddled a little bit the past 2 seasons, and then actually entered the transfer portal this offseason before withdrawing his name. What has stood out about Umari, and are there any other wide receivers that have made a real impact in camp?
It's been fascinating to see the receivers because, as I mentioned a moment ago, they're all different. So we're trying to learn who's what and kind of what role they're going to play. Hatcher was really starting to find his groove, like we were saying with Angeli, when he got hurt. So they forged a real relationship and a bond last year, standing on the sideline together because Hatcher was hurt as well. And people have really talked about his speed, his ability to get up. And I've heard from a few people, not only in the coaches that we've talked to, but people that have been around practice more. The media gets like 20 minutes and then they kick us out and do all the fun stuff, right? But I've heard Hatcher has really stood out. He's healthy. When we've talked to him in camp, I've been impressed by, you kind of feel like he's a leader in that room and he has a connection with Steve. So there's somebody to keep an eye on. I've heard great things about Zamondre Merriweather. Talked to both. I didn't get the chance to talk to Steve this week. I talked to the other quarterbacks, Amari Odom and Malachi Nelson, and both of them, when I asked who's standing out, he was one of the first names that they mentioned. He's a transfer in for Syracuse. Cole Weaver, who's a delight to talk to, by the way, fun guy who we got to chat with this week. He's kind of a tight end playing wide receiver, right? So he's that kind of safety valve that I think Steve will be looking for. I'm curious how to bring this into the tight end room, how Noah Myers is going to stand out as a pass catching tight end, because again, a lot of these names I'm saying, Weaver's got to make the jump from Miami of Ohio to the ACC. Myers has to make a jump from Western Kentucky to the ACC, right? So who's going to be that safety valve for Angeli? Julian McFadden has had a great camp. He's looked good. I know I'm going to leave out a couple of names here, but who he finds the connection with is going to be fascinating here. He's got a lot of choices. There's a lot of versatility in that room. There's a lot of great receivers that have talent, but there's only one football to go around. So who's going to get it?
I think that's really the interesting part is no, I know Josh has to run, so we'll say goodbye to him. We'll keep the conversation going for a
Thanks,
little
Brad.
bit longer.
See you, Josh.
And it's interesting because that's the prove it type mentality for I think a lot of these offensive weapons at I guess at every position, where Syracuse doesn't have a lot of guys that have proven it at a power conference level. And so that is I think going to be
Well, you know
interesting.
what, Griffin? I knew I would leave out a name or two. They love Booby Johnson's
Yes.
been somebody that stood out and had a lot of flashes, to use that term, in his freshman year. He has been as consistent a presence in camp as anybody, so they're counting on him to get in there. Darian Williams comes back from last year as well. But this demonstrates that there is a real, I don't know, power struggle is not the right way to put it, but there's an opportunity for somebody to like grab that wide receiver one title in that group.
I want to talk about the defensive coordinator, Vince Karras, a little bit more and what he is going to bring. Obviously, coming from Toledo, Toledo's had a lot of success defensively and also developing NFL players at a mid-major school, which is a little bit unique. How important is him and what have you seen from and heard from him and his philosophies defensively that is really going to change the game for Syracuse this season?
What I've really been impressed with Karras is, so we've talked to a number of defensive players, Griffin, and Antoine Delorier said this, Chris Peel said this, Chris D'Apollonia, who's a transfer from Toledo that came with Karras, said this. And what they've all said in their own way is that Vince Karras has an answer for everything. Now, how much of that can he relay to this defense to react and implement on the field? Because the best defenses, and Karras has said this, they play, they don't think, right? They know what it is and they go. Karras's defenses rely heavily on the cornerbacks locking things down and allowing the pass rush to get after it. So when you have Chris Peel on one side and Demetrius Samuel on the other, I think you're good, right? And that's what he said when he started to talk to Fran Brown and look at taking this job. He's like, well, I got Chris Peel over here who's his PFF grades are off the charts. He's a potential, I don't want to say first round draft pick, but he's not going to last long on that board if he continues on the path he's on now. And Samuel, of course, has been just a gangbusters breakout freshman. I don't think we're going to see him much on the offensive side of the ball this year, nor do I think we should. I think he should stick with what he's good at. But, you want to throw a wrinkle once in a while, It'd be fun to see number one running out there on offense. So what those two do and allows Karras to do right away is put his philosophy out there. Now, is it a 4-2-5? Is it a 3-4? Is it a 4-3? Like, I think we're going to see elements of all of that. I think what I really like about Karras's defense is you cannot put a label on it. But he has emphasized a number of times, corners lock it down, and that allows the guys on the interior to get after it. Delorier and D'Apollonia, I would throw Gary Bryan in there as well. They've been very high on Moultrie Goddard as well. He's earned a black jersey, and they think he's going to contribute in the linebacker room as well. But D'Apollonia is a great pass coverage linebacker, and they desperately needed that. So when you got a guy that can drop back in coverage and knows the defense cold and can go to all these guys, like I've joked with Chris a couple of times and talking to him, like, you must be the Vince Karras whisperer here. Because everybody wants to know, well, what's going on with this guy. And Karras joked about it earlier in camp that these guys must be getting sick of watching Toledo film. As they've gone through camp, now they can see themselves in the defense, but they had to watch a heck of a lot of D'Apollonia and that Toledo defense. So I like it. It's the one thing I mentioned the top 10 statistics. One thing I'm wondering about Griffin too is Toledo has been one of the most penalized teams in college football in recent years. So I feel like Karras kind of, who's like this too is Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a very aggressive defense, and it's just like it depends on what kind of officiating crew you get. So I think Karras is putting that kind of defense out there. Like, we're to come after you, and the flag start flying, we'll adjust to that. But he's putting pedal to the metal.
And it's usually the offense that gets penalized for Syracuse, that offensive line specifically. But, well, maybe we'll see that. It always feels like Syracuse gets penalized more than they actually do in the when the stats come up at the end of the season. One of the last things I want to touch on here is we mentioned how there's a bunch of new assistant coaches and coordinator as well. What does it say about Coach Fran that he wanted to make changes and did make a decent amount of changes after a 3-win season?
It says that he can put his ego in check. And it says that Syracuse has the budget to invest in this. We talk so much about NIL and paying players. You got to pay coaches, right? I mentioned it earlier. Castillo was pursued by the New York Giants. Syracuse had to outspend the New York Giants for an established veteran offensive line coach. Karras was in conversations to go to Nebraska and be their defensive coordinator. Now, that was a combination of Syracuse had the resources to pay him, but he liked Fran Brown. He connected with Fran Brown. Sean Ryan was recommended by Tom Coughlin, who I mentioned earlier, right? So for Fran to have those connections and have those relationships and be able to convince people to come to Syracuse when they had other options, but they also connected with him, right? So it's a credit to him that he can talk to these coaches and connect with them. Because the first round, Griffin, was we mentioned Elijah Robinson. And every coach does this. You stay in your circle of trust. Who are my guys, right? Well, we've seen a transition there. Josh Gattis is another name, right? This guy's won the Broyles Award. He's considered to be one of the better offensive minds in the game. And he's not even the offensive coordinator at Syracuse. Jeff Nixon is still here. That's a guy whose name has come up in offensive coordinator pursuits in the National Football League. So it's a credit to Fran's relationship building. It's a credit to Syracuse making the investment in the coaches when maybe there's a narrative that they don't quite have the money that some people think they do. And it's a credit to Fran to put his ego in check and have, he's got three or four potential head coaches surrounding him.
Well, that is all we have time for today. Brent, thank you so much for taking the time joining us back on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. The first member of the double digit club
I
for
love
the
it.
Ostrom podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me as always, Griffin. Looking forward to clearing some space on my shelf here with my 10 plaque.
Thank you, as always, to Brent Axe for coming back on the podcast. Number 10, the trophy winner. We'll get that trophy on his mantle soon. Hardware is coming over to Brent's house. But we're time to wrap up shop here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. As we mentioned, Syracuse football plays September 5th, Saturday at noon. Tune into WAER at 11 for an hour-long McClurg remodeling countdown to kickoff here on WAER. We have our first sports night with Josh Rother producing. Maybe you'll catch him on the air, butting in every once in a while with a disagreement to what our hosts say. That is Friday from 8 to 9. Double overtime, as always, goes up until 4. 4 hours after kickoff for football games. So tune in to that one on Twitter or YouTube. Lots of action. Syracuse football starting back up. It's exciting times. Will Justice Ross Simmons be playing on Saturday?
Who knows?
Who knows? Tune in to WAER to find out. And we got much more of the Ostrom Avenue podcast coming your way as well. Hoping to talk with maybe another friend of the program, Javon Edmonds, this week, or maybe someone New Hampshire football related to see what they got going on over in Durham. But for now, make sure to tune in to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We had a full roster breakdown last week. Anywhere you get your podcasts or at waer.org. Until next time, enjoy the Ostrom Avenue podcast.